This week is the start of the 2021 legislative session in Albany, and to preview what's possible over the next 6 months, we spoke Tuesday morning with Yancey Roy, the Capitol Bureau Chief for Newsday. Welcome back to the show, Yancey.
Thanks, Dave.
So in 2019, when the Democrats had majorities in both houses of the state legislature for the first time in about a decade, they got off to a quick start that January, passing a lot of bills that had been held up by GOP control of the state Senate. 2 years later, as we look at the legislative session for this year, is there any low-hanging fruit for lawmakers to pass during this legislative session?
Well, you know, the thing is that I think in 2019, they grabbed up all the bills that had been sitting on the Democratic wish list for a long, long time, and which had, you know, very strong support, high-profile support for not only the Democrats, but the constituent groups, such as the Child Victims Act and some of the voter registration laws. I think they really grabbed everything that was at the top of the list then. And so now, heading into 2020, they were looking at sort of a slightly lower profile list. And then COVID hit, and now everything's different. Everything now revolves around COVID. So there is legislation that they will be going through for the next 6 months, but anything that matches 2019, I don't think so. It's going to be slightly lower profile stuff, and it's all going to have to wait on the budget and Washington and the bigger picture about COVID.
During the campaign season, Senate Democrats made the case that they needed 42 members in order to obtain a supermajority like their colleagues in the Assembly, which would enhance their bargaining position with Governor Andrew Cuomo and give them the numbers to theoretically override a veto without any GOP votes. Fast forward to today, and the Senate Democrats achieved that supermajority. Do you think the size of the conference will have any practical effect on how New York is actually governed over the next 2 years?
Well, it may or it may not. I mean, what it, you know, the prospect of a veto and a veto override attempt are probably small. Can't say that it won't happen. But what it more likely does is strengthen their hand, the Senate Democrats' hand in negotiation, because if you know that you do have a supermajority no matter what, then when you go to negotiate bills with the governor, you don't have to worry about as much as the possibility of will the governor veto something, because you know you've got the ability to come back on it if you want and override it if you want. So it's one of those you'd have to, I think both sides or all three sides, if you include the Assembly, which also has a supermajority, now know this. And so collectively, the Senate and the Assembly have a little bit stronger hand in negotiating with the governor, especially when they get into nitty-gritty details of some issues and you know, what to leave in and what to leave out. Will it ever come to a practical effect? That's kind of to be determined, probably on a case-by-case basis.
There are bills that have passed the legislature for the last 10 years during Cuomo's time in office that have passed with unanimous or near-unanimous support, where the governor has either vetoed them or been able to obtain these chapter amendments where he gets tweaks to the bills, despite the fact that, you know, theoretically there are the numbers to override the veto. From your perspective, is this a case where until we actually see the legislature flex that override muscle, it's kind of hard to imagine them actually doing it?
It is. You'd have to have a real disagreement over issues. And, they're all Democrats, the people who control the levers of power. So you're not going to have huge philosophical differences. And then another thing towards your point about the governor vetoing or signing a bill that has large support but asking for an amendment to it, which we call the chapter amendments, you know, don't discount the fact that sometimes that happens because there's errors or oversight in drafting legislation. And sometimes upon review, the governor's staff will find that something was drafted in error, a word was wrong, and you have to change it. That's part of it. And then also sometimes some of these bills that, like you say, get widespread support but then get vetoed, keep in mind some of those are like budget-related bills, and they're passed after the budget. And it's kind of easy for the legislature to pass those after the budget and say, we want you to do whatever this bill says. And then the governor to say, wait a minute, this is the budget bill. We already did the budget somewhere around April 1, usually. And I'm not going to approve it. It's kind of like those kinds of bills, and I know we're talking a little bit in the abstract here, but those kinds of bills are easy for the legislature to pass and then kind of easy for the governor to cite a rationale for vetoing it. And those aren't necessarily reflective of any kind of power struggle between the executive office and the legislative branch.
Yancey, if I was a cynical reporter, I would think that it was just the legislature and governor sort of just playing through this dramatic dance that they do almost for show, based on that process you're describing, where they almost know it's going to be vetoed. I mean, that's very cynical.
Well, not that you're cynical or anything, but I mean, this doesn't happen often, but it'll be something like, I'm just coming up with an example off the top of my head. There might be a bill to essentially send more money to a particular school district because the lawmakers think there was some sort of error or problem with the amount of aid this school district got. And that may or may not be the case, but the governor's rationale for then vetoing that would be, well, this was done outside of the budget, and even if there was an error, if we pass a bill that, you know, makes a correction for one district, we're going to have 700 school districts asking for more money, and just in terms of process-wise, we can't do that.
In 2019 and 2020, criminal justice reform was a major topic of work for the state legislature and was a focus during the recent general elections. What sort of appetite do you think that Democrats in the state legislature will have to do further criminal justice reforms in 2021?
I think it's going to be up there on the list for some Democrats. There's often been a bill about solitary confinement in New York, to take one example, and to end solitary confinement. And it is an important issue for a lot of Democratic legislators. The governor, a Democrat, has said, you know, there's a lot of practical implications for something like that, such as the design of prisons and how do you accommodate such a change, and what would you physically have to do with prisons to accommodate such a change. I think that's one that will be definitely pushed at some point, maybe the latter half of the session, perhaps maybe tied up with the budget. But we're getting to another subject, which will be interesting here, which is what is going to be the balance and the progressive appetite for the Democratic-controlled legislature this year. Sure, both houses now have a super majority of Democrats. But if you look at the Senate, where the Senate gained Democrats was primarily upstate. And so now, in some ways, the Senate Democratic coalition is a little bit broader than it used to be and contains more upstate and suburban members than it used to be. And some of those suburban members were a little skittish about some of the criminal justice actions we saw in the past. Specifically, we're talking about the bail law, which eliminated cash bail requirements for most misdemeanors. So now that you've got a Senate Democratic coalition that is not quite so completely centered on the New York City representatives, it's got a little bit broader base. It's got folks in Rochester, Buffalo, Syracuse. Do they still go that far on progressive criminal justice measures? I mean, that's one of the intriguing questions coming up for the session.
The COVID-19 crisis has underscored the need for access to health care, and some Democratic state lawmakers have argued that access is only possible with a state-run health insurance system to ensure that everyone can afford care and have access to care. Do you think that with that as a backdrop, there is a chance that New York legislators will actually advance legislation called the New York Health Act, which would essentially require the state to take over and run health insurance for New Yorkers?
Well, this is one where you could see a difference of philosophy between the legislature and the governor.
Definitely.
And a particular area where they might butt heads. There is a lot of support for this bill in the legislature, in both the Senate and the Assembly. And at the same time, the governor has repeatedly said over the years that whereas it's not opposed to the concept, if there's going to be any kind of government-run health solution, health coverage, then it has to come from Washington and not just one state doing it, because then you run into possibilities of how does New York do it when maybe neighboring states, Pennsylvania and New Jersey, have a different system, and et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, there's certainly more support for this in the state legislature than there was 4 years ago, for sure. But does it change the dynamics of what New York would do? I don't know. And then again, the governor raises the cost of doing this. And with everything going back right now to COVID and Washington and getting federal help, everything hinging on that, the fact that New York has such a big budget deficit, that would make it seem less likely that a bill like this would go through this year.
During a normal legislative session, you're set up on the second floor of the Capitol Press Room, and the Capitol halls are filled with lawmakers, activists, and lobbyists. And this is not going to be the case in 2021 due to the public health crisis that we're still in. So I'm curious, you know, with this arrangement and, you know, everyone not really sharing the same space, how are you going to go about covering the legislative session?
You know, it's different for reporters. I think it's different for legislators. It's different for lobbyists. It's different for activists. I mean, I always thought great things about the state capitol was that it was such a magnet pulling in all of these different elements to the building physically. And any day of session, especially when you got close to the budget or close to the end of session in June, I mean, there's thousands of people in the building trying to get legislation passed, trying to block legislation. And there was always a flurry of activity. And not only was there an energy about that, but there was also a sense of, in some way, community about what's going on with lawmakers, your taxpayers' money, and how is this all getting sorted out. I mean, so that's all different now. And you wonder, you know, what we saw in 2020 was a greatly reduced level of activity by the legislature, much fewer bills passed, everything had to revolve around COVID. And you wonder this year, does that continue or does that begin to thaw and do things open up a little bit? I mean, that's probably something that'll be figured out post-budget and in the last 2 months of session, I think.
Well, we've been talking about the upcoming legislative session with Yancey Roy, the Capitol Bureau Chief for Newsday. Yancey, thank you so much for making the time. And in a future conversation, we're going to have to talk about the budget, which is its whole other conversation that really warrants a full segment. Thanks a lot, Yancey.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks, Dave.
You've been listening to the Capitol Press Room, which you can take with you on the go wherever you download podcasts. Our engineer in Syracuse is Dave White. My producer in Albany is Tim Williams. I'm David Lombardo. Thanks for listening. Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
Join us again for Capitol Press Room, a production of WCNY Connected, Syracuse.